This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill, Senate Republicans blocked a $50 billion war funding bill that mandated a troop withdrawal from Iraq to begin within 30 days. Democratic leaders say they won't collaborate on another war funding bill until after the first of the year. Congress left for a two-week Thanksgiving recess today without passing any of the major bills they were working on before leaving. A lawsuit challenging the Bush administration's warrantless wiretap program cannot go ahead. The unanimous decision by a federal court of appeals said that the government is protected by state secrets privilege. A federal appeals court throwing out the Bush administration's new pollution standards for trucks and SUVs. The court ordered that new regulations be drawn up, imposing tougher emission standards. Protesters marched to the U.S. Justice Department today to call attention to enforcement of hate crimes, in particular the Jenna 6 case. Busloads of people crowded into a downtown plaza in Washington, D.C. to protest criminal charges brought against six black teens accused of beating a white high school student in Jenna, Louisiana. Turkish prosecutors seeking to ban the main pro-Kurdish political party and even throw out some of its elected members from parliament. The pending indictment will include charges of separatism. A group of international election observers canceling their mission because, they say, Moscow has refused to issue them a visa on time so that they can monitor Russia's parliamentary elections next month. The country's top election official denies those charges. The prime ministers of North and South Korea have come to an agreement on economic projects that will boost North Korea's economy. The package will also contain ways to help ease the military tension between the two countries, such as a new cross-border train service, which will operate for the first time in more than 50 years. It is being called the deadliest storm in more than a decade in Bangladesh. At least 1,100 people lost their lives, killed by a swath of a powerful cyclone that blasted coastal towns with 150-mile-per-hour winds. Tropical cyclone Sider wiped out thousands of homes, cut electricity and phone lines, causing 650,000 coastal villagers to flee to shelters. Humanitarian aid is on the way. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll look at science and business news. That's just ahead. But first, this message.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address in city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
The state of California has fined insurer HealthNet $1 million. The company admitted it paid bonuses to employees who canceled policies of those who became sick. State investigators say the company lied to them twice about those bonuses. The Federal Reserve says that industrial production fell in October by 0.5%. That is the largest drop in 9 months. Retailer JCPenney posting a 9% drop in quarterly profit based on weak sales in September and October. Shares declined more than 5%. Kohl's department store chain announcing a 14% fall in quarterly profit. Ralcor poised to acquire Post cereals from Kraft Foods, the deal valued at $2.6 billion, which includes assumption of debt. For the first time, Starbucks reporting a decline in sales. Shares dropping 8%. Also, the company announcing it is scaling back on plans to expand this year by 100 stores. 3M acquiring Aero Technologies from a British buyout firm for a combination cash and debt deal worth $1.2 billion. Aero manufactures gear like hearing and eye protectors. Light sweet crude trading at $95.10 a barrel. At this week's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 67 points at 13,176. NASDAQ up 19 points. S&P 500 up 8. There's more on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
I have to start out laughing. I could never tell you guys what Bob, the things that Bob says in production chat just blow me away. I really should just close the production chat window until I get through my intro. I can't tell you what he said, but I will put it in my memoirs suddenly, someday when it's written. So I'll go ahead and introduce the show normally, and we'll pretend that Bob never said that. Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 73 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is indeed Friday, November 16, so if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on a Friday, that is November the 16th, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and speak to me or to our guest this evening. I'll be introducing him shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you'll find links, of course, to all of the guests as well as the sites for the guests, their individual websites. You'll find links to the audio archives from the past shows in case you see a guest there that you missed and you'd like to listen. It's all there at strictlyconfidentialradio.com, easy to find. You'll also find links to the chat room, of which I am currently having a look, and it looks like the gang's all there. You'll find links to the Head On Radio Network main site, where you can find out about all of the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network. Links, of course, also for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. It's going to be a cold one tonight here at home. I think it's going down to 26 or 28, wearing two pairs of socks, and we'll need Doggy's help as a foot warmer fairly soon. Oh, Jesus, Bob. I've got to close the chat window. Bob is tormenting me tonight. He's really a character. You just have no idea. In fact, I don't think I have any idea either. Let's see, where was I? Yes, I want to welcome to the show this evening Mr. Denny Meyer. Now, Denny is very special to me and to the network. You see, Denny was actually my guest on the third show when I first began Strictly Confidential. This was back in June. If you'd like to hear that original interview, it's located in the June calendar. I think it was June the 18th, about the 20th, the 21st, third show. And he was a remarkable guest. In fact, he entertained us for hours, and I've never forgotten Denny. And he's called in a couple of times during the course of this show running, and we appreciate him. Denny is in New York City, and is with the Gay Military Times and American Veterans for Equal Rights. So Denny has his ear to the ground regarding issues along those lines, and of course Denny was very much involved in the Veterans Day, the LGBT contingent of military folks in the LGBT section of the Veterans Day Parade in New York. In fact, if you'll stop by strictlyconfidentialradio.com and look at today's calendar dates, you'll see links to some pictures there in today's date, which is Denny's date. And in fact, you'll see pictures of Denny. Denny is the one who's right square in the middle of the... I'm going to have to close this one. It was right square in the middle of one of the banners, the American Veterans for Equal Rights. So not to delay it any longer, Denny, welcome to the show.
Good evening, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Oh, Lord, our producer, Bob Kincaid. He is the one that answered the phone, by the way. But when he answered the phone, he was also saying hysterical things that in production chat that I can't repeat, of course. And, you know, it's an evil thing to do that to a host just before he goes on air. Denny, how are you doing this evening? I assume you're very tired. By God, what a week you've had.
Well, yeah, it's been pretty hectic, you know. So I'm just kicking back here, relaxing, and getting ready to, you know, attempt to put everybody to sleep.
I won't let you do that.
Oh, okay. So it's, you know, it's been pretty hectic. Saturday I was out on Long Island at the Lesbian Gay Film Festival where they showed the movie Tell, T-E-L-L, and I'm in that movie. It's a documentary about gay veterans.
Wonderful. I assume that relates to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Is it released on DVD?
Yep.
Is it released on DVD?
Don't know. It's been showing for about a year now at gay and lesbian film festivals around the country. And it's about 88 minutes long. In fact, it's made by a local fellow down there where you are, somewhere in that area, named Tom Murray.
I'll be darned. I'll be darned. I did not know.
Yeah, oh, I have to hook you up to him. He might even just drive over and sit in the studio with you.
I could hand him a microphone. No need to dial into the studio. We'll just have him.
But he's an independent gay filmmaker, so he made this. He's made a number of other films. I think he's working on a trans thing now. I'm not sure, but he could tell you all about that. Anyway, so I went out there. And because they always like to have people talk after the movie. And so, of course, I've seen it now for the 11th time. And, it's a really good movie, but it does get old. So, anyway, then I spoke for about 20 minutes there. And then Sunday we had the big parade. So, of course, I had to get up at 6 a.m. for that. And then we had our car come get us. They'll go into the city and set everything up and deal with discrimination like we always do.
Were they trying to put you in the back or someplace where nobody would?
They've learned not to do that.
I can't imagine how they learned that.
People have learned not to. Can I use foul language here? They've learned not to deal with this little mother, because they try, And then
it's internet radio. You can get away with a lot.
Then it gets back at them, and they go, "Who is that little so-and-so?" So, I'll tell you what happened. But anyway, so that was...
Well, what position did you get in the parade? Were you somewhere near the middle? I've seen some of the pictures. It looks like a huge group.
Oh, well, we have a block-long contingent. See, that's half the fun.
Wow.
I don't know where we were, to be honest with you. You know, when you watch a parade, you can see what's going on. But when you're in it, you really... You just have your little space that's moving, and you really don't know what's going on around you. So I have no idea. Probably in the middle, but I really don't know. That's a strange thing when you're in a parade. So you have your space, and you have the crowd that you're passing by, and that's it.
Well, Denny, I noticed in the photographs that there was a... it looked like a marching band, and there was one guy in black pants and a blue tight shirt, and it looked like a ballerina dancing next to him in blue. What group was that, pray tell?
Well, that's our co-contingent, see? That's the New York Lesbian and Gay Big Apple Corps Marching Band.
And, oh, my.
They got, I don't know how many people in there, 50 people, all in gorgeous gay white uniforms with rainbow sashes, and the hats with the plumes, the whole bit. And then they have dancers, acrobats, and a rainbow color guard. And it's kind of a moving circus. And they always lead off the gay pride parades here. And today they were doing, this time they were doing ballet, these dancers. Usually these two are baton twirlers of great fame who tossed the batons way up in the air, and this guy is very tall and slender and handsome and wears real tight tights, and he's famous in the gay parades, and just the crowd goes crazy. So for 2 years now they've been marching with us in the straight Veterans Day parade.
That's hysterical. Now, was the one best dressed in the ballerina costume, the blue, was that a man or a woman?
Well, this time they had a man and a woman, and the woman was wearing ballerina stuff.
I see.
Tight.
Couldn't tell.
So we had a little to do about that too. But see, let's see. Now, well, we've gotten discrimination every year, but about 2 years ago, see, we had a little group of old gay veterans, including some World War II gay veterans, who were members of the Greatest Generation and fought in combat in World War II, and have chestfuls of medals, and see, the parade 2 years ago was dedicated to World War II. That's so I had three real-life World War II vets gay. And we had, you know, maybe 25 little people there, an American flag and a rainbow flag. And, of course, that rainbow flag is really, really deeply offensive to this bunch of old white Irishmen who run the Veterans Day Parade.
My stars,
doesn't
it must
bother,
have been.
Doesn't bother the crowd, you know. They love it, but, you know, this it just ruins their happy hetero fun.
Yes, it does. Only the heterosexuals can defend this country. Thank you very much. Get that flag out of here.
Yeah. It just, you know, it just spoils everything to have these damn fags in there. And it just enrages them, you know. And so this one guy who was a coordinator just saw that and just, you know, lost it and started yelling and screaming and told us we were out of order and pulled us aside. And, he was too smart to say anything about the flag. This is New York City, and you can't discriminate overtly. So then somebody else, you know, motioned us to move into the line of march, and he came over yelling and screaming and insulting our World War II vets. At that point, I turned to the man that I had with me there on purpose.
And oh, wow.
Alan, it's time to let them know who you are. And he was a member of the New York City Council.
Ah.
Oops. And so, you know, he went over to this angry Irishman and said, "Excuse me, I'm in this contingent. Is there a problem? I'm New York City Councilman Alan Gerson." No. And suddenly we're marching.
Well, gee, Denny, what other flags did you see there? There had to have been, of course, obviously the U.S. flag. Was there like a New York State flag? Flags
were
flying?
Many, many, many military units and veterans units, and they had all kinds of flags, you know. But we were the only ones with a rainbow flag, of course.
And not allowed.
So, you know, and they know what that means, and it just. It implies they're all queer. It just hurts their happy hetero fun. So, anyway, we were allowed to march then, but it shouldn't take a city council member to throw his weight around. But you see,
it's surprising that it's still happening, even this year in New York City of all places. You have to be escorted by
the there's plenty of prejudice. You know, we have cops who regularly shoot people because they're black. You know, things like that. You know, unarmed people walking while black and things like that. So, yeah, New York City, you know, you don't have to be in the South for this. Anyway, so that's the problem we had 2 years ago. And you see, I get provoked. I'm sorry, but I just get provoked, see, and that provokes.
Well, you even scare me a little bit, Denny. I always be very, very careful when you're on the air.
So I got provoked that they didn't like our little rainbow flag. So then this was like 3 days or something after the election, by the way, when Christine Quinn, an openly out lesbian, was elected to the city council and became the speaker of the council. Oops. Anyway,
yeah.
So that, you know, we had a little fun with that, too. So then I called up the Lesbian Gay Big Apple Corps marching band. And I explained the story to them, and I said, "Now, you know, you guys are free at this time of year. I don't suppose you'd want to march with us in solidarity." Well, they left at the chance. They get dedicated to this kind of thing. So instead of 25, you know, guys and one little rainbow flag, we showed up the next year with a block-long contingent.
Uh-huh.
And in fact,
that'll teach.
Yeah, well, you know, a rainbow sash on every marcher and the whole bit. And, you know, we had the best contingent in the parade because it's like a moving circus. You know,
I love it.
Gay people make better music than, you know, all these.
Well, you know, anybody can have a parade. It takes LGBT folks to make them fabulous.
Right. So, exactly. So, you know, we knocked their socks off. Now, during the whole year preceding this, you know, between the two parades, I, you know, called the speaker's office, the lesbian speaker's office, and complained. Then I called the mayor's office, and, you know, he's got a gay liaison, and I just raised holy hell about this discrimination and other things they've done to us. And I called, and of course, then they call the parade committee and say, you know, you guys really can't do that. The parade committee says, yeah, sure. But, you know, they're so arrogant, and, you know, they believe that the administration has authorized them to be prejudiced because, you know.
Yes, just like the problems. Just like the preachers, this, you know, it's top down. You know, the whole attitude is top down. Mm-hmm. When you got that at the top, everybody all the way down feels completely free to you know, to be that way.
Mm-hmm. You know, and all these, you know, leading, very important, highly conservative clergymen, you know, you're just supposed to ignore what they do. You know, you said top down. Well, I'm talking about the down part, the men's room, you know. But anyway... You know, yeah. I'm not gay. I just wanted to get a little head, you know. But anyway.
Yeah, I had a few lines for that somewhere tonight. Yeah, please.
You know, Mr. Wide Knees Craig there, you know. And, he missed a good chance because he could have said he had restless leg syndrome, you know.
That was perfect. That would have maybe even worked.
You know, he could have even signed up with the drug company and everything and turned the whole thing into a commercial. He could have said, no, this is a stunt, see?
I suppose when he tried to get down low enough, he could have pulled the old I've fallen and I can't get up routine, too.
Anyway, so I raised holy hell. And they kept ignoring it and still pulling stuff, you know, because they used to give us the wrong lineup location, you know, what the Republicans did to black voters in Florida, you know, go to vote here instead of there, you know, and things like that. So I called so many times that shortly before the parade, the mayor's office called these people and said, if that little mother so-and-so calls us one more time, we're going to come over there and, you know, pull the plug. So last year, you know, we were treated with utmost courtesy and marched, you know, in total beauty and freedom. And when we went past the reviewing stand, this great bigot who runs the whole thing had to announce American Veterans for Equal Rights and the Lesbian and Gay Big Apple Corps Marching Band. And I'll tell you, my heart leapt to hear those words come out of his mouth because he really hated to say it.
Yeah. And the truth be known, Denny, the gay vets probably deserve a higher level of respect than the straight ones, simply because not only did they have the stress of going over and fighting and dealing with the whole military thing, they also had the added stress of keeping their personal lives a secret.
Well, not only do you know, you're so right, because actually I led a conference at Columbia University here earlier this year about just that. And in fact, there were expert psychologists and psychiatrists and people. And it turns out that this is actually a recognized condition where gay people suffer, like everybody else, from post-traumatic stress disorder, but it's double and worse because they had to keep a secret. They were as if an enemy within during the whole time. They couldn't chat with their pals who were talking about their wives, girlfriends. They can't talk about their boyfriends. And so added stress, because at any time, you know, if they open their mouth and say the wrong thing, you know, could be trouble, shot in the back, whatever.
Well, you know, Denny, I completely agree. I came across something today that was very disturbing. In addition to what you're saying about not being able to let a boyfriend or someone, you know, for instance, if it's a relationship where these people are in love with each other, living together, maybe living together for many, many years, as is the case a lot of times, if the person in the military is in combat and away, the person at home has no right to be notified, even if that person is killed. Nobody's going to go to their door because technically they don't exist.
Exactly. You can't list them. They don't get notified. The only way they find out, and this has happened thousands of times in the current conflict, they just, you know, they realize. they'll stop coming. And
exactly.
Something's up.
In addition to that, I just want to fit in one more thing. In addition to that, I read in the same paragraph, I forget where I was reading, that not only did they're not notified that their partner has been killed, even if the partner has not been killed and transfers from unit to unit or goes from Germany to Afghanistan or any number of scenarios, they don't even get notified that their partner has moved. They don't exist. It's horrible.
And they don't get the paycheck because they're not entitled to it. They don't get to use the commissary. They don't get any benefits. And if there are children at home, and gay people do have children, they don't get the benefit of counseling or anything else because daddy's away or mommy. No way. And then when the partner gets killed and they don't hear anything, and then there's the funeral with the military honors, they're very rarely invited to the funeral by the family. And when the flag is folded, they don't even get the damn flag.
It's heartbreaking, really. Stuff like this.
Which is the only reward, you know, of when your partner dies, you know, when your spouse is, you get the flag. It is the secular ritual of the United States government to present that flag to the loved one. And you don't even get that. So, yeah, that's the tragedy.
It is.
And I've written about and that.
Have you? That's very interesting.
I've spoken about it and written about it, and so. This is it's all because of a pointless policy of ideological bigotry and nothing else. Because all over the world, LGBT people are serving openly in the military. Throughout Europe, England, Australia, and even the toughest fighting force in the world, in Israel. LGBT, all of them are serving openly. So,
Denny, that very thing came up, that very subject came up a few weeks ago. We were talking about these. I think they're even taking away the computers. They can't blog and that sort of thing much anymore. But there was a time when there were like tents where the computers were there, and you could sit down and email your family, and it was a place for you to just a communication center. Well, a soldier from Israel could sit at a workstation next to a soldier from the United States, and the one from Israel could be talking to his gay friends and talking to his partner and telling. But the one who's the U.S. citizen, the one who's from our country, could not contact any of those people for fear of don't ask, don't tell, because they look at those computer lines.
There are no Israelis serving in Iraq, but there are British.
There you go. That's what I meant, yeah.
You know, I don't know where the communication center is, but in one of Saddam's former palaces, you know, there's this comm center, and you've got a British officer or enlisted man chatting with, you know, Colin, his lover, and right next to him is an American, and he's got to look over his shoulder and worry about that. So, and you know, change the gender, at least somebody here or something like that. It's a shame, and it's still going on. And I've got a friend of mine who is a chief petty officer in the ADF, Australian Defence Forces, in the Australian Navy. And he's just come back from his second voluntary tour in Baghdad. And, you know, it's amazing because he served there openly. He even got some kind of American Commendation Medal or something, you know. And everybody knows he's gay. In fact, he's the poster boy of the Australian military for gay people serving. And, you know, all kinds of Americans and stuff like that come and see him just to be able to be with somebody that's gay and say hello and chat for a little bit, you know. So, quite amazing. And I occasionally get even contacts from people serving in Iraq who want to talk, because I'm on the net listed about how to contact me as the Veterans Affairs Officer of AFR or as the editor of the Gay Military Times. It's amazing the calls I get. So, and they're taking a risk, you know, because somebody overhears them and decides to report them, then they're screwed. In fact, we have many, many, many service members serving openly, open to their peers, who could care less. A survey, you know, done recently questioned Afghan and Iraq American veterans who came back from combat. And they were asked how they feel about gay people serving alongside them, and they could care less. It's only their leaders. And a few little assholes or bigots who, you know, have power because of the policy to screw them by reporting them, at which point they have to be discharged.
So, well, Denny, I was just going to say, it occurs to me this thing, you know, oftentimes we are criticized for this whole thing about gay pride. I mean, you know, that's nothing to be proud of, and what do you mean? Everybody should be proud of you, who you are. What's the difference between gay pride just being... But the thing of it is so many people's self-worth slash pride, if you will, is affirmed externally, and they depend upon those external systems to do that for them. We have to do it ourselves. When we say gay pride, what we mean is what we freaking worked for and developed in our spirits for years.
Well, everybody else takes their pride for granted. You see, you can be in a room full of fellow co-workers or soldiers, and they're Italian-Americans or whatever, and they're talking about their wife, and here's a picture of my kid, and, oh, you know, the wife went shopping yesterday, and yada, 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 and I'm going to our wedding, you know, of my nephew, and it's going to be a traditional Italian wedding, and blah, 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 blah. And this is all just normal chatter, which the gay person can't talk about. And then there is the other part they take for granted, which is homophobia. And, oh, yeah, those goddamn faggots and blah, blah, blah. And they're assuming the guy they're talking to shares their homophobia.
It's a common thing. They just always assume you just want to reach out and slap them.
Yeah, and you've got to go along with that, you know, and pretend that's okay, too. You know, and... So, you know, it's not gay pride. It's just who you are. Everybody does it. It's just when we do it, it's, well, what are you people doing? You know, why do you have to, well, you know, and then you have to point out, well, you've been doing it all along to my face, damn it, you know. And believe me, your happy hetero life is really boring, by the way. You know?
Yes, and by the way, you bore the hell out of me. Yes, I love it.
So, you know, I mean, do you think I really want to know what you did at Walmart?
No. Other things we suffer.
So, you can't even sing, for Christ's sake, you know. Anyway, so... So that's, you know, that's some of the background. So this year we marched again, and the Big Apple Corps joined us again. But this year, you know, Mr. Bigot recovered and failed to mention their name, you see. And we had these actors. Now, they were male and female, you know, but this is, you know, like, really not butch enough, you know, because it's, you know, a veterans parade. And heterosexuals and the need to kind of intentionally act stupid in order to demonstrate their masculinity. And so, you know, the guy saw these ballet dancers, which really, you know, enhanced the parade. It's just entertainment. It wasn't even queer. They were male and female. And he's standing there with the microphone going, oh, my, would you look at that, you know, and just, you know, like, see how stupid I am? I'm straight. You know? I mean,
they so
you know,
don't
hold,
get
hold
it.
A voice.
Not so. Everything. Some things are just entertainment. But I try to explain that to people. Some things are not meant to convey anything but just joy. That's it.
Well, see, we were there honoring our veterans. That's all the parade is about. We weren't carrying signs or anything like that. Many veterans groups carried their flag, which was Catholic war veterans with a great big cross on it, and Jewish war veterans, and VFW, and they all have their, you know, logo and stuff, and we carried ours, which is a rainbow. Problem? You know? I don't get it, you know? So, and of course the crowd loves us because, you know, this is very entertaining. And, you know, the crowd is not prejudiced. We have 80-year-old men standing there in their veteran hats watching the parade go by, and they see us and they salute.
Praise God. That says a lot, doesn't it, Danny?
It does, I'll tell you. And I didn't understand what was going on, but then I met an 80-year-old man, and he had a baseball hat on that said World War II vet, and, you know, a triple row of medals, you know. And he had his arm around his wife. And he was just an ordinary 80-year-old straight guy. And, you know, we were chatting, and he says, "So you're a veteran?" I said, "Yes, sir." And he says, "Then you're gay?" I said, "Yes, sir." And he takes a deep breath, and he says, "Well, you know what? I was in the Normandy invasion. And we had five gay guys in our unit. And I'll tell you something, the German bullets didn't discriminate."
Wow.
He says, "You know what? We all took care of each other's asses." And I just wanted to cry, because here is a guy who's 80 years old, served in World War II in the biggest massacre on earth, and you know, he didn't have a problem with his with the gay guys that had volunteered to serve alongside of him. I wanted to cry. And see, these are the people who are saluting us. They served with gay people 60 years ago and had no problem.
Danny, I must ask, No one comes back from something like that without being disabled in some way. I mean, or at least come back and they're not the same, because you can't go through that without it changing some fundamental things. And I get that some are changed inside and outside too. I'm wondering, did you have in the parade people who are obviously disabled, like in wheelchairs and that sort of thing? Because that seems to somehow, if you're disabled in a wheelchair, that seems to somehow magically get their respect. You know, they don't get it.
There's all kinds of people in the parade. In my group, we tend to be a bunch of old men. Nobody's in a wheelchair, but we do have like an SUV kind of thing. And we call it our disabled veterans vehicle. And there were like eight of us in there, including myself.
You were there. Good. That's good that was brought up, because I can just see them. They assume that you were, you know, some sort of radio operator in the back of the line, you know, back where there's no bullets. So they assume that you were a nurse far, far away. You know, they have no idea that you're right up there with everybody else.
Today, in Iraq, we got, you know, roughly 79,000 lesbian and gay people serving. And every role that you can think of, from infantryman to intelligence officer to combat engineer, you name it. There's this guy who was in Iraq a few years ago, a lieutenant, leading patrols, you know, past roadside bombs every day, and he was transgender. And, you know, I've talked about that to people, and even to straight people, and they raise their hand and say, "Well, how can you have a transgender person serving in Iraq? I mean, you know, what do they wear?"
And oh, Christ.
You know, like I'm talking to a child. I say,
a uniform, you idiot.
I say, combat gear like everybody else.
Exactly.
Women over there, you can't even tell, you know. What do you think he's going to wear? Heels and a sequin dress to fight the Iraqis? I don't think so. You know.
I don't.
Oh, well.
We've had several trans.
Well, and then they go.
I was just going to say, we've had several transgender guests on the show, and we've learned a hell of a lot. I was appalled at my ignorance on the subject until we've had some people come on that have really straightened us out and told us. My heart breaks because they get it so much worse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So then they say to me, "Well, you couldn't serve openly." I go, "Why not?" "Well, we would confuse people. What would you call her? I mean, you know." And I go, "How about lieutenant?"
Yeah. You know, well, duh. Lenny, I love it.
You don't have to be a rocket scientist to speak English, you know. But if you're a narrow-minded, little egotistical bigot, you know, like, I mean, listen, these people who are prejudiced against gay people, you know, you have to realize who these people are. They're also prejudiced against somebody with a different color skin. They're prejudiced against somebody who isn't their religion. And when Clinton integrated women into the, you know, units back in the 90s, these same little twerp brain, bird brains said, well, I can't work alongside a woman. I mean, you know, I'd be distracted, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
you know, like
same
that.
Thing with blacks.
And, yeah, and I mean, it's just, these are the people who do not belong on the team, because they're not team players, because they're too egotistical and narrow-minded screw-ups, and I'm using the polite term here. You know, they can't be trusted in combat, because they won't back you up. And people can get killed because of their personal little egotistical issues. It's not gay people that are the problem. It's the little bigots that don't belong. And so,
it reminds me of some stories I've heard from police department.
Yeah, well, when the military, you know, old fogies in the Pentagon say, well, whatever, we can't do it because it would upset people, you know. Actually, the people who are upset are the ones that don't belong, because they are not trustworthy to anybody. Because it's not just gay people, so.
Denny, that makes me wonder, we're talking about the people who get upset are really the ones that don't belong.
Right.
I'm wondering if the all of the LGBT people who have been kicked out of the military, if the, those total numbers would probably replace every one of them that didn't like it.
Well, I happen to have numbers.
Oh, yay! Wonderful.
Oh, I do have numbers. I do have numbers. The military is very shorthanded these days. You know, they, I mean, who would sign up, you know? And so they're allowing, they're, they've lowered their standards to allow people with criminal records and skinheads and Nazis and, you know, white supremacists and people to join, you know, really trustworthy people. And, but still they're very, very short. And, if gay and lesbian people were allowed to join openly, 41,000 would, young people, fresh out of high school. Well, that's, you know, something like 10 brigades. Guess how many brigades we are short?
How many?
Okay, and then there'd be a million other young Americans who would join, who are straight, who won't have anything to do with an organization that discriminates. So, now, every year, oh, about 3,500 people get kicked out for being gay. Oh, no, I forgot the number. No, it's less than that, because, of course, it's more convenient to hold on to people in wartime. But 3,500 people leave every year because they've had enough of serving in silence. People who've been in for 8-10 years like I was and leave without a word, taking with them years of training, experience, and leadership. Well, that's about 3,500 people. Guess what? That's a brigade. You know, you could talk to people and they'll say, oh, well, you know, it's a very insignificant number. We don't see the problem. Well, it's not. Because 10 brigades, that's how many people would join. And a brigade every year is lost. It's a very significant number.
I see.
So, and there's 79,000 right now, roughly speaking, serving on active duty.
Well, Lenny, that reminds me very much of some of the numbers I'm hearing from churches. You were well aware of the fact that churches are going through these huge arguments in their annual conventions, and that churches are splitting, and like a huge congregation with churches all over the country, 40 churches will leave the church when they, you know, have a gay bishop or the first gay marriage or something. And you know, 40. But one example was the United Church of Christ, or it's Church of Christ. I get them confused. When they were affirmative, they lost, I think it was, I have the numbers, like 40 churches, I believe. But within a year, that 40 churches was replaced plus more by churches who wanted, right? So, and what you're telling me, I've seen it in reality. In fact, the church, the United Church of Christ gained churches after they got rid of the deadwood.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I don't know too much about churches. But, you know,
I know you don't, but I was just saying it's similar.
But I heard, I don't know when it was, sometime recently, you know, that these arch-conservative churches were really railing against the more liberal ones. That the, you know, they were very upset that these churches were focusing on gay rights. They were focusing on things like world hunger and starving children in Darfur. And you know, they were upset about this because they wanted them to focus. focus on more important stuff like hitting tags.
Yes, this is exactly
you know,
the...
This is in the paper, you know, and I'm like, hey, hello? What? You know?
Jimmy, if I weren't so old, I'd try to become Jewish. I swear to God, I would.
Well, there's no difference. They're just as French as too. So, you know, it's all a lot of mumbo jumbo. Step to the left, step to the right, take two steps forward, take two steps back, you know. Kiss the implements and all that stuff. It's just a lot of mumbo jumbo. This is, get ready, this is really offensive, but it's so true. Somebody sent me this in the email in the last few weeks. It goes like this. It does not take religion to get good people to do good things. And it does not take religion to get evil people to do evil things. But it does take religion to get good people to do evil things.
And I completely agree. Not offended at all. I think everyone here agrees.
It makes so much sense. I even had, you know, like people who are religious, bigoted people hear that and they go, you know, that's right.
I often say, God save us from the Christians. I mean,
it's not, you know, wait a minute now, because I grew up, you know, I mean, some people are bisexual. I grew up bi-religious. And, you know, bi-religious, bi-coastal, bisexual, but I'm gay. But anyway, you know, whatever. And I'll tell you something. Every religion, every scripture, from Jewish to Christian to Muslim to, you know, somewhere towards the beginning of every one of those books, it says, you know, you're the chosen ones, and it's okay to cut the throats of all the others. And you know what? I don't believe this bullshit. I'm sorry. You know, I think that, you know, if there is a God, you know, we're all his children or her children. And, you know, I don't, you know, these books were written by man, even though they all say, you know, this is the word from above.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense, you know.
Right, and they were commenting on conditions and situations in their time, and people refused to believe that, and every word is hand-scriptured by God. Never mind all the errors by the scribes, never mind that.
But never mind the parts about the gay lovers, either.
Never mind, oh God, no, and the women lovers, Naomi and Ruth, oh honey.
Now you got to choose which parts you like, you know, and of course it was written in English.
By King James.
Except for the parts that were written in German, you know. So, you know.
Yeah. And that reminds me, you speak fluent German.
Yes, indeed.
Are you from there? Did you live there?
German is my first language, actually. English is my second language. That's why I don't speak it very well.
you do fine.
But before I get into that, I was just going to finish the, you know, there are these this huge number of Germans who lived out in, I don't know, Minnesota or somewhere. And, you know, they're from Norway, Scandinavia, Germany. And they used, you know, their original Bibles in their own language up till the mid-1940s or so, and then they started to modernize. And there were all these old-timers, you know, who heard about all these plans, you know, to build a modern building, church building, and to get, you know, English language Bibles, and the old timers said, you know, why would we want to do that? You know, I mean, if German was good enough for God, it's good enough for me. And, you know, people said, well, what are you talking about? He says, well, it says right here, right at the beginning, Adam Vovisto, you know, God spoke German, you know. Adam, where are you? You know, and then, of course, they were going to build modern church buildings, too, you know, including a, you know, indoor toilet. And, of course, these old-timers would, you know, get really upset. In Goethe's house, you know? But anyway, I speak German because I'm the child of refugees. First-generation American. My parents were Holocaust refugees from Germany and had to flee with the shirts on their backs to keep from being gassed to death in the gas chambers. All my other relatives were killed. And my mother came here to Ellis Island in 1938 as illegal immigrant. I think I told this story, didn't I?
I don't recall it. I remember some story. I'll never forget Matlevich. But by all means, retell this.
But my mother came here as an illegal immigrant without papers. And, you know, when people start ranting and raving about illegal immigrants, then I'll tell them, well, my mother was an illegal immigrant. And her son volunteered to serve in the American Armed Forces and served for 10 years and became a sergeant first class. Is that good enough for you, damn it? That's me. You know?
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Give me a break. So so they came here, and so I grew up on the Upper West Side of New York City. And this was in the late 1940s. I like to scare young people by saying that.
I'm appropriately scared, but I'm 53.
Truman was president, you know. In fact, color had not been invented. Everything was in black and white, even white.
The whole world, I love it. The whole world turned color in the 50s.
Everything was
I love
black and white, you know. And color came in about 1960. Before then, everything was just gray.
Mine's just priceless.
Anyway, so I grew up speaking German until I was 6 years old. In fact, you know, all the refugees were starting families, and so I was like one of the first baby boomers. And I grew up with this cohort of, you know, thousands of kids just like myself, children of German Jewish refugees. And we all thought we were speaking English, but we weren't, you know, we were speaking German English, you know. And it wasn't until we got to public school that, you know, like, oh, is that English, you know. So when I was 6 years old, my parents realized I'd have to, you know, like, know English. So they hauled out some 78-speed British language lessons to the young people. There used to be something called vinyl records.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Even at my tender years, I remember those.
And these were, you know, language lessons from England with headings like at the Tobacconists, speaking to servants. You know?
Oh, but, please, you're kidding
real
me.
Real stuffy. And I went off to public school. Huh?
I'm just echoing it. Speaking to servants, it just blows me away.
Oh, yeah. So it was all very proper, and I went off to public school in New York City, which was the first city probably in the world to be integrated, and chirping like a British schoolboy, and 5 hours later I came back, you know, speaking, you know, like Harlem, you know, and because, you know, you learn really quick when you're six. So that's, you know, so I've never forgotten the German. There's a lot of words I don't know, but so I speak German and New Yorkese and British and Australian.
Oh, I would be so lost You would have to, if I were with you somewhere, you would have to, like, confine your vocabulary to a very narrow area. I'd just be totally lost, I can tell you.
Well, I speak Southern, too, you know. I can
praise
say,
God.
I can say a dog, you know.
Well, then, this is probably why we communicate so well.
All right. You know, so, anyway.
Denny, there's something else I'm wondering about. We're talking about the numbers of people who are discharged. What would you say the numbers today, the actual percentage or approximate numbers who are actually serving in the military at this point in time, by choice, under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, who are LGBT? What are the numbers these days?
Oh, well, I told you. That's roughly 79,000. About 2 years ago, the extrapolation was 65,000, and we're guessing it's roughly 79,000 now.
That is a lot of people.
Of course. And if they all
That's amazing.
Once, you know, it'd be a serious problem. That's like half the people in Iraq, you know, the American forces. So, you know.
Well, Denny, another area I wanted to go into with you, the Herald Sun, which is actually an Australian, you know, we don't hear these numbers in the United States often, so you have to go to foreign sources. The Herald Sun today released that the U.S. military is experiencing a suicide epidemic, veterans killing themselves at the rate of 120 a week, and that 6,256 people committed suicide in 2007, which is about, or 2005 rather, which is about 17 a day, and that has gone up dramatically. Denny, this is horrifying, and I noticed on your website you have a suicide hotline. Who does that link to?
I do? Oh, no, that's on the national website, and it's actually not
our hotline.
It is the military's or the Veterans Administration's own hotline. So
well, how do they do it?
As a service.
Tell us what's going on with that.
Well, I mean, you know, you send troops over for 15, 18 months, you know, of constant hypervigilance, and I mean, you start to go crazy. I think even during World War II, they didn't have people, like, on duty for 15 months in a row. They sent them home because they realized, you know, they were going to lose their minds.
Yes.
I hadn't seen that number. What I saw on the news today was that the desertion rate is like double what it was 2 years ago, because people just get desperate and just, you know, they just can't go on. So, and that's not a gay issue, it's just a human being issue. So, see, the problem, I think, is that in prior wars, everybody was involved. People sacrificed. And people were drafted so anybody could go, you know. Now you have a really relatively small fighting force. And everybody else in America is completely uninvolved, even at Bush's suggestion of go on and keep shopping. Don't worry about it. And, of course, you know, he forbids coffins to be shown coming back, you know, draped on the flag. That's illegal. They can't be photographed. So people are not involved, and the people who are involved, the families and service members, are really isolated and not getting thanked for it because they're just, you know, they're forgotten, basically, because, you know, people are really sick of this war, and they're just putting it out of their minds and told, keep shopping, you know.
Well, it's true. So, it's true, Denny.
You know, in every other war, right or wrong, everybody was involved. And really was a part of it and was sacrificing. So even during Vietnam, you know, you saw constant on television every night what was going on. And everybody is involved because, you know, anybody could be drafted. And here you got just basically a small core of patriotic volunteers, and, you know, it's just not the same thing.
Well, Denny, earlier in the conversation, I was just going to say that earlier in the conversation, you mentioned that you had received a phone call from someone. I know you can't talk about that particular call, only that you received it and you didn't know it was verified. But what I'm wondering is that, in general, on this line that they call you on, are some of those people talking about suicide? I'm not talking about this incident.
No, because they know that we're not particularly equipped to do that, because
I see.
For a person to be a veteran service officer and trained by the Veterans Administration, you have to belong to a charter organization. We're going to be chartered hopefully next year. That's being worked on. But you know what I provide is advice and referral and things like that. And
I see.
It's very clear that, you know, we're not set up for emergency calls like that. And there are, as I said, you know, hotlines run by the VA for that. I don't know that they're particularly well equipped to deal with gay people, but, you know, usually these lines are run by professionals, psychologists, and so on. And, you know, person says, you know, I've had enough with service, and I'm going to kill myself. And by the way, I'm gay. I think they can deal with that, you know. I haven't gotten that kind of call.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
People who are really, really desperate because they've been outed and they don't know what to do, and I can aid them in the right direction really, really quick, because there's an organization that deals specifically with that. So,
do you send them to Service Members Legal Defense?
Well, if they're on active duty and they've been outed, yes. They of lawyers, that's what they do, you know. So, you know, there is something for everyone, more or less. It's just that there is really no real recognition of LGBT people in the military. and no support services for them. Whereas, for example, there is a official military-run lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender support services website for the Australian military, run by my friend there, and it's just mind-boggling because I've looked at it, and it's it's very, very official and kind of bureaucratic and stuffy, and it's it's official military website for LGBT people, you know, listing resources and everything else in very military language, you know, and it's the way it ought to be, you know, for us, you know. So,
do you get calls from the partners of LGBT people because I realize that because they don't exist, they certainly are not. They can't go to. I assume that this is like counseling and base housing where they.
They're not eligible for any of that. They don't exist. We've had many, partnership families that, you know, the service member happens to be the breadwinner, and you know they're not getting the check that ordinarily would, you know, go to the family or anything like that, and so. They're starving, unable to pay the rent and everything else, you know. And there's you know, alternative services that we hook people to. So the Metropolitan Community Church, several years ago, opened up their food pantries to the partners of LGBT service members serving overseas. And so
wonderful.
That's the problem. That's where I send them. And they're, fortunately, in many cities around the country, you know. So, but it's all ad hoc, you know. Whereas straight people take these services for granted, they have them all, like for the military, paid for by your taxes. And then
right.
You've got gay and lesbian people serving right alongside of them who aren't eligible for any of that stuff because, you know, they can't even say who they are. It's just like telling people, well, you could serve, but don't let anybody know you're a Baptist. Don't let anybody know you have blue eyes or are left-handed. It's just as stupid.
Well, you know, Denny, I've been reading about the links that people have to go to who are partners of LGBT soldiers and military people. They have to go. They have to pretend they're the nanny, the housekeeper, the cousin, and people are talking about how proud they are of their service member, and they feel the same pride, but they can't express it. They're totally disconnected. It's just hell on earth.
There's no point to it whatsoever. None whatsoever. See, because there are gay people serving openly with their peers and taking out the picture of their partner and, you know, talking about when they went to dinner for this and that. Then the other one will say, yep, I did that with my girlfriend. And, you know, they just couldn't care less, you know.
Well, Denny, you know, we talk on this show about, gay marriage, and we talk about the fact that as soon as you sign a marriage certificate, you are given approximately 1,200 rights that you do not have right with the civil union, etc. And I'm just finding out today, Denny, that 350 of those 1,200 rights relate to the family of a military person.
Mm-hmm.
Including like access to educational benefits, loan preferences. Denny, the right to be buried next to your spouse. They don't have that. The more I find out about this, the more upset I become.
Well, you know, and in England, the armed services there, the Royal Air Force, Navy, and Army, are competing with each other in recruiting gay people, offering, you know, benefits and saying, well, never mind the Air Force, we'll give you armed base, you know, married housing, you know, and...
Oh, my stars.
Well, we'll give you this. And, you know, they're actually competing with each other to recruit gay people.
Denny, what's wrong with this country? How did we fall behind? Even in Spain, there was a story I did about a Spanish couple, Alberto and Alberto were their names.
Yeah,
I was impressed by that.
We've been trying to get a hold of them to interview them. Yeah.
Oh, really? Well, pass them on to me if you get them. I'd love to talk to those guys. I'm so glad you're chasing them down.
They got married.
But what's wrong with...
But, you know, they had, I think the first gay military wedding was in Canada, or in England, one or the other. and they had the whole thing with the cross swords and everything, you know, and it's just no problem there. And here, we're back in the Stone Age, where, oh my God, that's just how we couldn't, you know. Well, you know, as I've told you before, they're really afraid that, you know, gay people will get into leadership positions here. And, you know, well, it's really too late, because we've been serving ever since the Revolutionary War.
Well, that too, and Denny, you told me once you have a gay admiral somewhere in your knowledge base.
More than that, you know, we have the highest ranking retired out gay person is Admiral Alan Steinman. And he is the sweetest man you could ever meet. But anyway, yeah, he's a total.
Well, you know, I lust after these people for an interview. You know I'm lusting.
Ah, well, okay. But anyway, he's a retired Coast Guard admiral. Then I've also interviewed two out gay retired Army generals, including a brigadier general. And he was, the number cruncher for the Army, and he's the one that gave me those numbers on brigades. And so there's Brigadier General Virgil Richard, and then there's General Keith Kerr. There's quite a few, actually, and many, many captains and other flag officers. So, we've been leading troops, ever since the Revolutionary War. There was General Friedrich von Steuben, or if you want to say it in American English, Steuben. And he was a Prussian military genius. And, in fact, the reason he came over was because he kind of got a reputation in Europe, you know. And so he had to start over in the New World. And he arrived at Valley Forge in 1778, that cold winter, with his young French lover. So, you know, I don't think General Washington was too concerned with who was screwing who. He was, you know, he needed people to train the Continental Army, and that's what von Steuben was brought here for. So, and he didn't speak much English, so Washington assigned two young lieutenant colonels who were fluent in French, who were lovers. And they don't teach you this in junior high school, by the way. They were 20-year-old Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Hamilton, sounds familiar, and
yes,
his lover, 24-year-old Lieutenant Colonel John Lawrence. Now, who the hell was John Lawrence? Well, his father was president of the Continental Congress in 1778,
You are rocking my world. Stuff just blows me away.
And Henry Lawrence, the father, who was president of the Continental Congress, became the first American leader whose gay son was killed in battle. So, the other little thing they don't teach you in junior high school is that Alexander Hamilton wasn't white. You know, they don't like to teach that part either. It's kind of inconvenient.
Well, he has all the paintings are white.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Just a couple of months ago, there was a like 6-part series on PBS about Alexander Hamilton, and they showed this really, really white, you know, man who like chased women like crazy. Well, of course, in those days, everybody was bi because you couldn't just be gay. But, he was, his love letters with John Lawrence still exist. I think they're at the One Institute in L.A. or somewhere. And his mother was Trinidadian, and his father was a Scottish colonial. So he was mixed race, and he was the first American officer of mixed race. And the reason he got where he was is because he was such a bloody genius that, you know, they couldn't hold him back. They sent him to Harvard, Yale, and things like that. So, they don't teach you that in junior high school because, you know, people might get proud that, you know, this mixed race person was a leader of America.
Yeah.
So, and gay, you know, bisexual at least. So.
Yeah, and in the churches, they don't tell you the choir, they're half gay, the organist is gay, the preacher's gay, and half the people sitting next to you are gay. Nobody gets it. Nobody gets the fact where everywhere, every demographic, where everybody from dope fiends robbing convenience stores to the people you just... Right.
But, you know, well, I just love, you know, these stories that come out. Week after week, they just don't stop, you know, about the preacher of a mega church, you know, caught in the men's room. I just, you know, and it's very sad.
Well, it is sad and funny a little bit, too, but,
know,
yeah.
They should be able to, you know, they shouldn't have to go to a men's room. They should be able to, you know, live openly so they could meet somebody properly and nicely, you know.
Well, Denny, let me ask you this.
Because they're not proud of themselves, you see. There's the tragedy.
Well, there is the tragedy, and marriage would mean so much. I know it would have changed my life had marriage been, because you could never advance beyond, you know, boyfriends, partners. I mean, everything's so damn casual because there's no way to formalize anything.
True, because, you know, like Dustin Elmer, whom I met recently.
And who I have mentioned on the show.
I mentioned on the show
the other night that I was in hopes of having, I didn't give their names, but I told them a couple that had been together 62 years. Please go ahead.
And there are many relationships. I mean, they're the longest, probably. And if somebody's been together longer, please call them. We want to know. But anyway, they're the longest. But there are many, many people who've been together for a long, long time. And, I mean, I was with my lover for 20 years, and we didn't need any damn piece of paper. You know, straight people hold themselves together with a piece of paper, and we didn't need that. All that held us together was our love. There wasn't a scrap of paper that held us together. And, you know, the marriage is, you know, that's nice because you get all those rights. And it's acknowledged. And you get to, you know, mess with your taxes and everything else and get privileges. And if one of you gets sick, the other one can go and tell the hospital what to do. But, you know, to hold us together, we didn't need any piece of paper.
And, well, that's a powerful statement.
These two guys, you know, were together 60, have been together 62 years. You know, Elmer came back from service in the Pacific in 1945, and he had been in the battles. He was in the invasion of, I think it's Lugdapayan, somewhere in the Philippines, anyway. And he volunteered for that. And, you know, had been mortared at and shot at, and even after they settled inland, they were being shot at by the Japanese from the sugarcane fields every night and all day long. And here is this, you know, member of the greatest generation, and he came back and was walking through Columbus Circle in New York City in September of 1945. These two young men caught each other's eye, and they've been together for 62 bloody years.
An absolutely remarkable story. I sent them an email today.
Well, they're very famous. I mean, they've been written about and, you know, photographed, but nobody told, you know, Elmer's combat story, so I wrote that up. And, you know, about, I think it's 3 or 4 years ago, after all that time together, 3 or 4 years ago, they went to Canada and got married. So,
that's remarkable.
Big spokesman for the marriage issue now.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm hoping to set up a date with them soon. I sent them an email today, and I understand that they're open to the idea, and I just can't wait. That got to be, you know, the perspective of an individual versus the perspective of a couple is different. Even though it's the same subject, it's different, and I just can't wait. Denny, we have a caller that wants to join us. Her name is Kate, and she's one of our regular listeners and callers to this program. You'll love her. Kate, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Peter. Thank you for taking my call. Danny, thank you for your service, active duty, and what you're doing for us now. I just am delighted at what you're doing, and I always worry when I think about you, wondering if you're burning yourself out and taking care of yourself, and probably not, huh?
I'm a burned out old fart, you know, quadruple disabled, and, you know, so this just keeps me going, you know.
Yeah,
I'm too hungry to drop dead.
Pardon me?
I'm too ornery to drop dead, you know.
I know, I got that. What I wanted to know, when I'm just sitting here, I'm a past military dependent wife from the 60s and 70s, and so I'm real familiar with the military, and until I said I don't live here anymore and left, and he wasn't too amused about that, but whatever. I always thought that whole military mindset is just there's no room for even any queer wives leaving their husbands either. Ooh, buddy, it was awful. What I wanted to know is what do you think will be the, I don't know, that there's going to be some kind of an event or some kind of a shift in consciousness or something that will put us in a position of validity, or when is this going to change? I mean, I know it's been awful since the beginning of our country, but what is there something you see on the horizon that's going to change the attitude? I mean, we wait on
about gays in the attitude about gays in the military.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I love it when people feed me lines. Well, you see, the donut, well, gay people have never been allowed, but it became a law that forbade them to serve openly in about 1993.
Right.
Here it comes, dear. and that was signed by the first President Clinton.
Right.
And 2 years from now, that law will be repealed, and that'll be signed by perhaps the second President Clinton. Anyway, but I brought down the house the other day when I said that law was signed by the first President Clinton. But anyway, that was to an audience at a lesbian gay film festival. That kind of. Anyway, I love to be a wise guy. But anyway, of course, organizationally, you know, I'm completely nonpartisan. But anyway, as I've often said to audiences, if I'm offending any Republicans here, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care either. Go ahead.
But seriously, there's a bill in Congress, the Military Readiness Enhancement Act, which was introduced in 2005 and then reintroduced in the current Congress this year by Marty Meehan of Massachusetts. And this would repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell and prohibit discrimination against LGBT, lesbian, gay, and bisexual personnel. Transgender are a totally different category. And then gay people would be able to serve openly. And it has 136 signers, co-signers at the moment, in the House of Representatives. And they're working on choosing the right people to introduce it in the Senate. And they're trying to get a Democrat and a Republican to do it, you know. Make it bipartisan. It's very important, but it's still symbolic because this president, you know, would never sign anything like that.
No.
But it will be signed in 2 years by the next president. And then bring us in line with the rest of the modern world. And at that point, the military will receive an order. You will not discriminate against LGBT personnel. Now, other countries anticipated this and spent 5 years preparing for it. Our military is, you know, just going to have to do it all at once, so it's going to have to be phased in because, you know, but they will follow the orders. And in fact, even in the Pentagon, attitudes are changing.
One would hope.
Yeah, but it's going to take a while, but, you know, they will follow the order. And, you know, I fantasize a time, you know, 50 years from now when, you know, a straight person will sue to be able to join the military, will have to demonstrate that he's fashionable and, you know, understands how to be made.
Sorry, I got to join in the laughter on this one. That's priceless.
The sixth President Bush, you know, one of the great-granddaughters, you know, will announce that she feels the military should stay gay as it traditionally has been.
they're requisitioning new pearls for the camis, right?
So
earrings match the insignias or something.
Well, there you go. Yes.
The brass doesn't clash with the pearls.
Flight of the day. The flight of the day. Item 17: proper attire for transgender personnel. So, you know, what's the big deal? I mean, really, you know, if you can do your job. Listen, you know, the big boogeyman has been, you know, well, these people, you know, gay people and God forbid, transgender people, you know, are just not suitable. They're just totally unfit. And you know, the ultimate demonstration would be, well, look about submarine service. You know, everybody's jammed together.
Right.
Well, I know, you know, several transgender people who served on submarines, you know, without any problem. You know, so, you know,
I think they're concerned, too, that you can't blouse pumps. You know, I mean, you get those folks out there who are the snappy dressers and they're trying to blouse their pumps. That's going to cause a big problem, you know. So, and they won't wear their 50 Mission Crush in the right, at the right angle, and oh dear me, and boas.
Well, yeah, but seriously, you know, there's no psychological block to being able to do the job right.
That's what I mean.
That's what it is, you know.
So, but the point is that, I mean, what's so concerning is that if it takes a presidential order that says you're going to take queers in the military, and they will, and this will be, and then they'll have to follow the orders, that still doesn't change the basic attitude. Just like, how long did it take the Tuskegee Airmen
first of all, this will not be a presidential order. It'll be a congressional order. Because in 1993, Congress made a law that said gay people may not serve openly. Therefore, it can only be changed by another congressional law. It has to be signed by the president, the way this country worked. But so, you know, but anyway, you see, the attitudes have changed already. It's just the old fogies in charge, you know, who have an ideological stake in dividing people politically. Keeps the policy alive. The people serving now could care less. Many of their younger leaders could care less. It just orders from the top that we'll have to say that's that. You know, this cannot be tolerated anymore, and everybody serving openly. You know, they may need a little help from retired gay people like the admiral and senior NCOs to help write the rules. But see, all of this has already been done in Australia and England. And they've never had any problems. And, you know, if America could, like, get off its high horse for a few, you know, a little bit, and look at what the other militaries have done, they can, you know, it's pretty similar. So.
Pardon?
You just have to weed out the bigots who don't belong anyway, so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So the bottom line to this whole thing is we're just waiting on the old farts to die off, huh?
No, they will be ordered to, you know, either get with the program or get lost. We don't have to wait for them to die. They just, you know, they either have to follow orders or get out of the way. That's all.
Yeah.
I imagine probably most of them will get out of the way, you know, rather than submit.
Yeah, well, but, you know, there's a lot of political appointments now, and, you know, that'll change. But in any case, you know, the law will change in about 2 or 3 years. You know, there's plenty of experience from many other countries where everything went along just fine. So
we can look forward to disco on the parade grounds then, huh?
God, I hope so.
Well, no, see, that's the thing. You know, no, because
Danny, that was a joke.
I know. But you know, we're kind of, you know, when I, that's okay. That, you know, that's, but you know, we're you know, the point is, we've all been perfectly ordinary soldiers and sailors and airmen and women, many of us have been senior leaders, enlisted an officer, and you know, there isn't any nonsense, you know. We've been better leaders than other people because we're not busy chasing our egos, you know, so.
Yes, indeedy. Yeah. Well, and, you know, I wanted to say, too, that I really appreciate your historical perspective too, and sharing all the those little tidbits with it, like the Alexander Hamilton thing. I didn't know I appreciate that. Every time you come on, I always learn something new, and I say, oh my God, really? That is so cool. I can't wait to drop that on somebody's foot. So I just want to thank you for your service and what you're doing for us now, and it's always a delight to have you on, and please come back and keep us apprised of what's going on in the movement. Mm-hmm. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Good night, fellas.
That was caller Kate, and she's always a trip. I love talking to Kate, and she had some good questions there. Denny, we had a guest on the other evening from the UCLA's Williams Institute, which is the full name of that.
You had Gary Gates.
Yes.
Right. We certainly came up with all these numbers, you know. He's the genius where all these numbers come from that I'm quoting. Excellent.
Well, actually, Gary was on last night, and he was a marvelous guest. If you'd like to listen to that show, just go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com. Mm-hmm. At the very bottom, there's a date, 11:15 show. And it's the Williams Institute on Sexual Orientation, Law, and Public Policy. I guess I'm not surprised you knew exactly what it was before I told you. But there's an interesting number.
We all know each other, you know, all the people in the movement. Yeah. But anyway, go ahead.
I'm slowly entering the fold, one guy at a time, one woman at a time. His number is that, and this is regarding California, that 11% of same-sex couples have at least one a family member, it could be a spouse, it could be a sister, it could be a brother, who's a veteran, compared to 14% of married couples. And when you consider that there's a vastly larger number of married couples versus the fewer number of same-sex couples, it seems to me that there are a lot more same-sex couples that have people in the military. I thought that was an interesting statistic.
I hadn't heard that one. That must be a new one that he came up with. So, but I mean, the point is, you know, we've all led perfectly ordinary lives, and that includes serving in the military. You know, and for gay veterans, there's this kind of thing, like a double coming out. Sorry, Veterans Day is also National Veterans Coming Out Day. And it goes in two directions. See, if you're a gay veteran, you're supposed to tell a straight veteran friend that you're gay. Then you're supposed to tell a gay friend that you're a veteran. And you're liable to get shit on both sides. So,
well, I should think so. And that's today? I had no idea it was today.
Well, no, I mean, the Veterans Day was last Sunday.
I see. Oh, it was on Veterans Day.
Yeah. It's a month after National Coming Out Day, basically. And so we call the whole month, you know, National Coming Out Month and so on. Veterans Coming Out Month. And so, anyway, but, you know, because there's a lot of gay people who can't imagine why a person would serve in the military if they're gay. So our coming out goes both ways.
Yeah, it really does. An odd position to be in, very odd. How long were you in the military, Denny?
10 years in 2 services.
And what period of time was that?
Well, 1968 to 1978, roughly.
And did you get involved? Wasn't that during the Vietnam era?
It wasn't over.
Yeah.
And that's why I volunteered. See, I was raised, I think I said, with this religion that is called, there's nothing more precious than American freedom, because my parents, you know, I wouldn't have been born if they hadn't gotten into this country as refugees. And so we were raised to worship American freedom. And so during the Vietnam War, I was at college, and I was doubly exempt because I was a college student, and I'm gay. And there were all these anti-war protests. Well, I had no problem with that because I'd been taught that war was just the worst evil. I wasn't particularly involved in the protests because I was too busy screwing my head off, you know. But
yeah,
you know,
everyone was.
Well, you know, listen, there's a tart, and then there's a slut, and I was a tart. And the difference is, you know, you got to buy me dinner first, quicker than I grow up.
one of those. Okay, okay.
But anyway, but then the protesters started burning the American flag. They had turned this anti-war thing into an anti-American thing because they were young and foolish. That's fine, except that it pushed my button because I come from this, funny little refugee world where you burn the American flag and that's, you're burning something sacred. And so I was young and idealistic, and I said, well, what are you going to do about that? I said to myself. And I said, I'm a first-generation American, and I said, it's time to pay my country back, and I went off and joined the Navy. And, that night my parents said, you what? you're supposed to become a doctor or a lawyer or a civil rights activist or a homosexual. But who knew I liked it? I mean, it's a weird thing. And lots of gay people do. I mean, not everybody wants to be in the military, but a lot of people, we're a very diverse people, gay people. And some of us are, just inclined that way. And I did it out of idealism, and then it turned out I liked it. I stayed for 10 years, two services, and left as a sergeant first class for the Army.
Wow, and who knew you'd be doing this?
I actually left because I found gay rights were finally appearing, and I got tired of going to the supermarket looking over my shoulder to see if anybody was seeing me. And I just got tired of serving in silence. And there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people like myself who left. We weren't caught. We just left without a word. And so I took with me 10 years of training, experience, and leadership. And, Brigadier General Richard talked about that, too. He figured out the numbers, and I forgot what it was, but, it was, a huge number of brigades of people who just simply left. And when you try to replace a guy who's been there, a man or a woman who's been there for 10 years, I mean, that takes another 10 years, to replace them.
Denny, there's something I'm curious about. You are involved with both the GayMilitaryTimes.com, which is actually TheGayMilitaryTimes.com, spelled out, and also with American Veterans...
I'm not involved with it. I am.
Oh, you are it.
It's,
okay.
Yeah, it's the one-man operation.
Okay. And then there's...
I'm the chief bottle washer, I write the stories. I upload them onto the website. I do all the tech work. I do everything. Okay, go ahead. The question is.
you're involved at least with the American Veterans for Equal Rights, which is www.aver.us.
Right.
What is the two purposes of the sites? How do they focus differently? Can you give us an idea of those?
Okay, American Veterans for Equal Rights is a national Veterans Association with chapters across the United States. So we have chapters in New York and Chicago and Cleveland and on and on and on. You can go to the website and see if there's a chapter in your area, and if there isn't one, you can start one. And then we have a national chapter for people in rural areas who just belong to this kind of, national chapter, named after Tom Dooley, who's a famous Navy doctor. It's an association which is dedicated to advocating for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, but it's also a service organization for LGBT vets, well, actually any vet, but particularly LGBT vets across America for our needs, and also as a social group. We march in parades. I mean, it's a chapter-based veterans association, just like any other. But it's for us because we're not welcome in the other organizations.
When you say that you've written an interview or you've interviewed someone, are those interviews on the Gay Military Times? Is that where you're referring to? I see. I was curious about that.
Gay Military Times is simply a web zine that's updated every 2 weeks with news stories, and it's dedicated to influencing Congress for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell for the passage of the Military Readiness Enhancement Act. And it's got something like, it really varies extremely from month to month, but something like 20,000 viewers. And I'm told it is, in fact, read by members of Congress. And that is our target audience. And so we have Profiles in Patriotism, which is story after story about lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender veterans, their lives, their service, their medals, and what they're doing now. And starting with stories like World War II combat veterans like Dr. Franklin Kameny, the father of gay rights, who's still going.
I actually met Dr. Kameny once. He's an amazing gentleman. It was many years ago.
He is. He is really. He's truly the most amazing person. Anyway, he's very cantankerous, and he doesn't hesitate to say what's on his mind, and it's usually graphic. Anyway, I'll tell you a story about him. But anyhow, so the Gay Military Times has that. It has commentary by people like Admiral Steinman and people like Gary Gates, and I've interviewed politicians. I've interviewed former Governor McGreevy of New Jersey, who in person is the nicest guy you could ever meet. And you just, you know, all kinds of editorials by other people and op-eds and people like Rhonda Davis, who came out 2 years ago at a marriage rally and was promptly kicked out, became a leading spokesman. And the people you hear about in the news who've been kicked out and so on, it's just a lot of commentary and stories, and it's just a showcase for the movement. And I call it the voice of the military rainbow community.
Well, I think that's wonderful, and if you don't mind, I might want to maybe try to lure some guests from there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, see, as a result, I get called by the media, CNN and others, you know, who are looking for stories, and so they call me to get hooked up to these people by phone, and so that's what happens, you know. I mean, you know, and with AVRA, I'm the National Public Affairs Officer and Veterans Affairs Officer, so. And, you know, the fun of it all is that I'm a disabled, old, impoverished man living in a tiny apartment, and barely able to pay the bills. And yet I get all these really fun phone calls, and so I'm having the time of my life, you know, in my old age.
And even that, you are one of the people who is informing the United States government. We have Congress. I mean, who knew? It's, you know, the internet has given us such wonderful access.
Right.
It amazes me.
But you see, there's a movement to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and there's more than a dozen organizations involved. You know, there's AVR, and there's Service Members Legal Defense Network, and they use their Washington location and power to kind of really kick Congress in the pants. And then there's USNA out, which is U.S. Naval Academy, people who were actual naval officers, and then there's a new one for the Air Force. And there's just, you know, several dozen organizations, and we actually coordinate. And we all know each other. And anybody who has said anything, I eventually interview on the Gay Military Times, you know. So, there's a whole movement out there, and I try to present it in some unified way on the website there. But all the websites, we're all linked to each other anyway. There's one for active duty service members to kind of, you know, a blog for them. And which is kind of dangerous, but you know, it's, with the internet, you know, you can start up an anonymous account, so it's okay. And you know, there's just one organization after another, each with its own little angle. But we're all kind of working together to get this thing to happen, to change the law. So the Gay Military Times was started by a group of people who've been leaders elsewhere and got together and formed something called Military Equality Alliance. And the kind of flagship was this concept I had of the Gay Military Times website. And we started it on July 4th, 2006. And I had this fantasy that we would be read by Congress. And somehow, you know, I just kind of stumbled in the right direction and it happened. So, but that's just a web scene, and AFRA is a real organization, you know, with actual chapters. So they're two different things.
I see. Nonetheless, the communication portion of the Gay Military Times is, there's nothing else like it that I know of.
Well, it's kind of a magazine format. That's my concept. So it's kind of, you know, eventually easily accessible, sort of. There's many, many other websites, but they're kind of techie, so more organizational and bureaucratic. But, you know, I kind of, that's, I want something that anybody can read and just get the message pretty clearly. So
and from real people.
Right. So that's why I tell people stories. And they can see, well, you know, geez, this guy doesn't fit this, you know, weird stereotype that I have in my mind of a sissy. You know, which of course is, you know, a stereotype that never existed anyway. You know, these are people who were soldiers and fought combat, took shrapnel and took bullets, bled, and have medals, and, or served as clerks or whatever. And it just makes it really clear that, you know, well, why the hell should they be able to serve openly? They've been just serving all along, you know.
Agreed. I have a question for you. About
I had a butch job in the military, you know. I was a clerk, you know. I drove an armored typewriter. Anyway, go ahead.
It's priceless. I can see it now. Oh,
well,
the mind boggles.
I around in Navy helicopters, you know, and jumped out of them and stuff. So, you know, anyway, go ahead.
Well, I was wondering about, regarding Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now, obviously, there are not gay clubs, or at least one wouldn't imagine, in Iraq or Afghanistan, but in the United States there certainly are, and it's no secret that many times they are, there's no shortage of gay clubs around military bases. Does the Army still, or the military in general, still send, like, plants into those places to catch military people who are off base going to the club?
According to the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law, it's Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Don't Pursue, Don't Harass. And, you know, it's all part of the Don't Ask, Don't Pursue part, where no, they're not supposed to do that. Are they doing it? I couldn't tell you. But are people being ratted on by others who see them there? Yes. Are they supposed to react to that being ratted on? No. Do they? Yes. They kick you out. So it's more a matter of being seen now and being ratted on by some little useless loser bigot, you know, who says, oh, this guy I'm so jealous of is gay, I can screw him by just reporting him, and they do, you know, and so that's what happens. Are they sending military spies into the bars? I don't know. They're not supposed to be. Are they listening to me talking to gather information? Probably.
Yeah. Well, I know they certainly used to. There was a story I did a while back, and it had to, I think it was called the Black Cat, somewhere in California. There was an officer that used to drive like 200 miles to go to another city so he could go to a club. And it's not like these people are chasing drinks. You can get a drink anywhere. It's not an alcoholic thing. It's just trying to find people you can relax around. That's very important
exactly.
For people.
Being with your own kind, right? And Black Cat, that sounds like a bar in San Francisco from the 1950s that was owned by Martha Ray.
Oh, my dear Lord.
Now, course,
it
why
may
I
be,
have
it,
such knowledge, of course, you know.
Not that you've ever been there. Yes.
No. Anyway, the 50s, I was a little boy then. But, you know, how I know these things, you know, shades of a misspent youth, you know.
After investigate that, that's just amazing. Well, Denny, you've done a remarkable job again this evening. You have kept us all entertained for almost 2 hours straight, and it's deeply appreciated. One last thing, tell us about your day to day. You told us about the Veterans Day, but today weren't you interviewed like twice before I got to you?
Yeah.
What happened today?
But it was kind of a busy day. Well, see, because we marched the parade, you know, there's all kinds of reporters, people out there, who see something interesting. And, I mean, You know, the Veterans Day Parade is basically a non-news thing. It's pretty boring, really, unless you're a veteran or a family of that. And here comes this gay group, and they go, holy shit, you know, and they write it down, and then they Google us, and so I get these calls. So the first one was a German photojournalist who was doing a photo shoot and came over here, and so we carried out a German. And they were supposed to be here for 20 minutes, and they were here for 2.5 hours. And then I had a journalism graduate student come after that. She was here for 2.5 hours. So it's been, you know, a little bit of a hectic day. And then in between,
and then I've
calls from veterans and service members and stuff. So
I see. And then I got to you, and I took another 2 hours. So imagine this weekend you're going to go to bed and cover your head and pretend it never happened. I would do.
I wish, you know, but I've got like one or two interviews that I'm doing for Gay Military Times tomorrow, and then I've got to put together the next issue, which will come out Monday night. It's going to be a transgender issue. It will be all about transgender service members. So
really?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So that should be interesting.
Yes, I should think so. Well, you are greatly appreciated. What you do and the work that you're carrying on is valuable and it's one of the things we at least try to do here is to burst stereotypes and present people as we really are. And you certainly go a long way toward doing that, and it is deeply appreciated.
I'm just a 61-year-old bard that's, you know, just nothing to lose anymore. I've been outrageous all my life, and I just can't stop.
I still get it.
You know, there's little they can do to me now, you know. So,
that's
like they can kiss my, you know.
Yeah, one of our listeners wants to
glitz. That's it, you know.
One of our listeners in the chat room earlier said that one day the military will be such that we get to interview the straight people and see if they have, you know, the taste and the manners and, you know, to get it. Right. This is a fellow I refer to as the world's most fabulous straight guy. He says, not all straight people are without taste, style, or flair, or music appreciation. Anyway, Billy loves you. He just wanted to say hello. That's his way of saying hello. And he's a delightful person. He has a show, by the way, on this network on Saturday evenings beginning at 9 p.m. He does a music show. So, Denny, you are a deeply appreciated guest, and thank you so much for telling Gus and Elmer about the show. I'm looking forward to having them on and scheduling them soon. Now, Gus and Elmer, for the folks that may have tuned in later, are the couple that are very likely the couple who's been together longer than any other gay couple in the country. They've been together for 62 years and are military people from way back. They met in the service. How romantic. I just can't wait to talk to them.
Well,
and you interviewed them recently, right?
I talk a lot. Where do you hear Elmer?
Dear Lord.
We'll have to extend the show.
We'll have to book them for four hours.
This guy is 88 years old, and he's got a razor-sharp memory of every single moment of his life, and he'll tell you about it, and it's worth listening to.
I'm sure it is. And you interviewed them recently, too. Did you go to their home and sit down and talk with them for a long time?
Right.
That's wonderful. I wish I could go to people's homes and do microphones and stuff.
I thought I'd spend an hour or so pulling a few faded memories from the mind of an old man. And instead, I thought I'd never get out of there, and I didn't want to because, you know, as I say, they remembered every detail and were very happy to share it with me. And every detail was fascinating. So, sleeping in a hammock in the Philippines over a river while machine gun fire was coming from a sugarcane field. I mean, God.
My stars. From a gay couple, you just don't know these things. Somebody's got to tell you because you can't imagine this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't, especially somebody that didn't go through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame about the way the generations are. You know, we're all so isolated. You know, people know their grandfathers and their grandmothers because they get married, they have children, and all that sort of thing. But as a group of gay people, we don't often know the older and people who have been through things and have experiences to share, because there's this whole youth culture, middle age. It's like these age, the generations stick together so tightly.
So it's wonderful to hear from you, and you know, it's and it's cross.
I have to give credit to young gay and lesbian college students who, across the country, have their student groups, which they're calling queer alliances, and they've been flying me to their colleges to come and speak and share my experience.
Really?
Old friends.
Really?
Just emeritus, yeah. So.
That's interesting. We had a group from Gleason here.
Going on, you know. So, they do want to learn. So I went to Brown University and Harvard. I mean, you know, it's very exciting too.
Were they associated with the Gleason group, GLSEN, Gay Lesbian Straight Education Network?
No. These are just college student union groups. Many of them
individual group.
Queer Alliance.
That's
the new terminology. And you know, and then there's, of course, what sort of a thing? Race, gay, straight, something or other.
Gleason, Gay, Straight, Lesbian Education Network.
No, but there's some, you know.
Oh, Straight Gay Alliances.
Yes. SG, right. And I've spoken to them, too. And so there is communication going on, you know. And they do want to hear from the old parts about what it was like, and they don't.
Well, we do.
They want to.
You guys, no, we don't. And you're so, you just can't believe the things we learned. I treasure these moments, and in fact, if you'll recall back, I think it was in September, the GLBT Historical Society, I think in San Francisco, did a whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
About and of course I had to have them on the show. We're just
good.
We're just hunger.
Mm-hmm.
We hunger for history. We really do.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we have done without for so many years.
You know, when I was a kid, there were none of these gay organizations, and we were all on our own. And when I go to the gay center now, and there's this 5-story building with a 3-story rainbow flag, and 40 meeting rooms that are busy from sunup till 11 at night, I just want to cry because, you know, we've actually come a long way despite the discrimination that's still happening. And none of that existed when I was a kid.
Me either.
I mean,
I remember going into the library.
My role model was Superman. I mean, here was a man in tights who wore his underpants on the outside. You know? And, you know, we have much better role models today.
My role model was from the guy from Sea Hunt. Remember him? I think his name was Mike Hunt or something like that. He did the scuba diving bit all the time.
Oh, yeah, but that actor is a real bigot. I forgot his name now.
Oh, he is? I didn't know. I didn't know at the
time. I think
he's
dead now, but, you know, yeah.
Well, the community center that you were just speaking of...
Well, now we know what your type is.
Well, they figured me out of this network a long time ago, honey. We were talking about the village people, and everybody was saying who they wanted, and I told them I wanted the construction worker. So after that, they've nailed me.
Let's see. The guy from the... Oh, dear. Okay. Well, why not, you know?
Why not? It's radio. Nobody can beat me up.
I almost revealed what big famous actor I went with once, but I can't, you know, that would be rude, so I can't do that.
Oh, do?
No.
Oh, tell.
No, the man is still alive. I can't do that. But anyway, but he played the part of a superhero. But I won't go any further than that. You know?
No, not Batman. I'll shut up.
Batman or Superman or Spider-Man or...
Okay, one of those guys.
But
well, listen, was the community center you're referring to the new one in Chicago?
Well, no. I'm in New York, so I'm talking to one here, but it really can refer to any one of them across the country. So.
Yeah, I did an interview with the Chicago...
They built a real whiz-bang brand new one there, yeah.
They did, and it just opened, and it has the conference rooms and what have you, and so they were very proud of it, and we had a representative tell us about how it was, you know, how long it took to build and the financing and how. So I appreciate having. Yeah, so I appreciate having you on, Daddy. I'm going to go ahead and wrap. We're at about 10:55, and I'm going to go ahead and tell about the shows over the weekend and.
All right.
And And I, because if I know how we are, what we'll do is we'll run to the very last second. And I'll have to say bye, go away. Yeah, we've done that, and I hate to do that, so I like to do it much more gently. And okay. Denny, you're welcome. You're welcome on this show, and thank you for staying up so late with us. I know you're exhausted.
No worries. Have a good one.
You too, sir. Good night to you. And that is our dear friend Denny, and as I said, he was my guest on just the third show of Strictly Confidential. At the time, I was a total radio virgin, and he was a remarkable guest because, you know, he didn't really need me to prompt to dig and all that sort of thing. He felt very comfortable telling so many things. That was the show that we learned that he kissed Sergeant Leonard Matlovich, which I used in a promo once. It was a priceless moment. And let's see, what is there to tell you? One is that I don't believe that John or Joe will be live this evening. Now, I'm not sure why. I'm sure they're fine. But nonetheless, this, I believe, is the last live show for this evening. But I do want to tell you guys about the weekend. Now, one show I know the start time, and that is Billy Shears' Night Sounds. Billy Shears' Night Sounds begins at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. On the same stream, the Head On Radio Network stream, I have literally stolen music from his soundtracks and played them on this show before because his shows are so remarkable. Trust me, you will not be wasting your time if you tune into Billy Shear's show. It's remarkable commentary that blends into the music about the songs, about the artists that I assure you, you do not know. He is remarkable. And there's no year, there's no time period, there's no track that he does not know. I don't know. I grew up crawling around the floor in a gay bar. Billy must have grown up crawling around the floor of a record store. So he's remarkable, Billy Shears. And he also does the Billy Shears musical commentary site, which so many people post wonderful music to. This weekend we have Rick Goodner also. Now, I'm not sure about Rick Goodner's time, but he is running at least Saturdays in rotation. Now, Rick Goodner is our horn psychologist, whom we so desperately need and count on, and he does Rick's Place, which is also a remarkable show. And Joe is transitioning to a weekend show, which will begin not tomorrow, but the following weekend. So that's the reason that Joe is not live tonight. And let's see what else. Oh yes, Matt Sowards. There's so many hosts on this network, I can't keep up anymore. I have not even had time to hear Matt Sowards. So, but from what I hear, he does a remarkable show. And let's see, I have Sowards. Thank you. I didn't have the pronunciation. Haven't heard him talk. He's on the road, and so he's at a meeting at the National Young Democrats in New Hampshire, and so I'm not clear if he has a show this weekend or not. But in any case, we have a new host, Matt Sowards, and there is no show for Matt this weekend because he's doing the traveling. So that's all I know. As you can tell, it's hard for me to keep up with the guests. I do the best I can do. But trust me, the Head On Radio Network is the place to be. So thank you for sharing this week with me. I have thoroughly enjoyed it. Next week we'll have some remarkable guests, too. And in closing, here's Cynthia Manley reminding you to...